So in 2022, a major industry analysis of United States anti-money laundering enforcement came out, and it revealed this statistic that honestly made financial executives across the globe breathe a massive sigh of relief.
Oh, yeah, a huge one.
Right, because federal banking regulators issued 19 AML-related enforcement actions that year. And the total financial penalties actually dropped. They went from $403 million in 2021 down to $384 million.
Which on paper looks great.
Yeah, exactly. On paper, it looked like the system was getting safer. You know, the regulators were calming down, the banks were doing their jobs. But in reality, cartels, sanctioned entities, and these massive fraud rings were moving hundreds of billions of dollars right under the regulators' noses.
Literally hundreds of billions.
So today, we're taking you on a deep dive into an in-depth stack of source material covering this specific year of enforcement. And our mission is to uncover why those statistics completely concealed a multi-billion dollar financial crime wave that was just right about to break. Okay, let's unpack this. How does an entire industry look at a drop in financial penalties and completely miss the systemic rot underneath?
Well, the illusion really starts with how those headline numbers are generated in the first place.
Yeah.
And I guess more importantly, who is actually generating them?
Right.
Because that industry analysis that reported the slight dip in penalties, it only looked at four specific federal banking regulators. You've got the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, the FDIC, and the Federal Reserve.
Which sounds pretty comprehensive, honestly, until you realize that measuring financial crime by just looking at those four regulators is like, well, it's like trying to measure the crime rate of a whole city by only counting the parking tickets issued by one single precinct.
That is a perfect way to put it.
You know, you're missing the grand theft auto, the burglaries, and just the entire rest of the metropolis.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is how fragmented the United States enforcement system truly is. Because if you look at a country like the UK, you have the Financial Conduct Authority, right? They act as a primary centralized watchdog.
One main boss.
Right. The U.S. does not have that single central AML authority. So by only looking at those four banking regulators, those 2022 statistics completely left out the Department of Justice.
Which is huge.
Massive. The DOJ is the entity that actually prosecutes criminal offenses like money laundering conspiracies and systemic fraud.
And it also leaves out the Office of Foreign Assets Control, right?
Yeah.
OFAC. Which enforces economic trade sanctions, plus all the state-level authorities like the New York State Department of Financial Services.
Oh, and we can't forget the SEC and the CFTC monitoring the actual trading markets.
Yeah, so it's a massive blind spot.
It is. And because of that fragmentation, a single financial institution can face simultaneous actions from multiple authorities for the exact same underlying failure.
Just getting hit from all sides.
Exactly. And the sources point out a massive statistical trap here called double counting.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, let's say a bank gets hit with a $100 million fine for failing to monitor international wires. They might agree to pay that full amount to the Department of Justice. But in the settlement, the DOJ credits $30 million to FinCEN and $20 million to a foreign regulator.
Oh, I see. So if an analyst just adds up all the separate press releases from those different agencies, it looks like $150 million in total fines.
Right, when the reality is just $100 million moving around different ledgers.
Just a total distortion of the math.
And beyond the mathematical distortion, focusing purely on dollar amounts completely ignores the mechanics of non-monetary enforcement actions.
Like monitorships.
Exactly. A regulator might impose a monitorship, which isn't a fine. This is a regulator legally forcing you to install an independent external team of auditors physically inside your building.
Wow, just setting up shop in your office?
Literally. They sit on your trading floors, they read your internal emails, and they have the power to report your daily operations directly back to the government.
That type of intervention paralyzes a business way more than just cutting a check. So if the pure dollar amounts of the 2022 fines were presenting this distorted reality, we really have to look at the actual types of failures these institutions were making.
Right.
And the sources outline a very clear, very dangerous theme for 2022, which was institutional growth completely outpacing compliance controls.
Yeah, and Treasury's 2022 National Illicit Finance Strategy explicitly warned about this. They flagged the rapid adoption of virtual assets, massive technological shifts in payment processing, and the increasing abuse of complex legal entities.
All things the banks were simply not prepared for.
Not at all. We saw financial institutions expanding their customer bases and transaction volumes at just exponential rates. They were launching new digital products to capture market share left and right.
But they kept their compliance department staffed for the business they had, like 5 years ago.
It's exactly. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's look at the mechanics of the largest federal banking AML penalty from that 2022 compilation. I'm talking about USAA Federal Savings Bank. They faced $140 million in coordinated penalties.
A massive hit.
Yeah. The regulators found they willfully failed to maintain minimum Bank Secrecy Act requirements from 2016 all the way to 2021.
And to understand the severity of that, we have to look at what the Bank Secrecy Act actually requires of a financial institution.
Right, the BSA.
Yeah, the BSA is the foundational anti-money laundering law in the U.S. It requires banks to keep highly specific records of cash purchases, file reports of cash transactions exceeding $10,000, and crucially report any suspicious activity that might signify money laundering, tax evasion, or other criminal activities.
And USAA failed to file thousands of those suspicious activity reports, known as SARs, accurately and on time. But the sources highlight a critical distinction here. This was categorized as a governance failure, not a design failure.
Yeah, and that distinction is everything. A design failure is... it's like when you implement a new transaction monitoring software, and despite rigorous testing, there is a hidden logic bug.
Like a technical glitch.
Right. A bug that accidentally filters out a specific obscure type of international wire transfer. The bank discovers it, reports it, fixes the code, and remediates the missed alerts.
So the intent was compliance, but the execution just had a technical flaw.
Exactly. USAA's situation was entirely different. Their customer base and revenue were growing massively, but they refused to scale their compliance program to match that new volume.
Right.
And the OCC noted that USAA management had actually been warned about these exact internal control problems by supervisors in previous years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they simply did not correct them.
So when a deficiency is identified and management knows the exposure exists, but they choose to allocate resources toward revenue-generating expansion rather than fixing the broken compliance engine.
That elevates it from a technical glitch to a severe governance failure. They accepted the risk of facilitating financial crime basically as a cost of doing business.
Which sets up our next case study perfectly. The sources detail a situation with MoneyGram, who got fined $8.25 million by the New York Department of Financial Services.
Right.
Now, $8 million sounds relatively small in the grand scheme of global finance, but the mechanics of how their system was exploited are just incredible.
Yeah, it's wild. MoneyGram's network operates through independent agents. And the regulatory findings showed a sudden, explosive spike in transactions sent through a specific cluster of these agents to recipients in China.
How big of a spike are we talking about?
Well, to give you a sense of the scale, this activity jumped from about 7,500 transactions worth $30 million to more than 25,000 transactions exceeding $100 million.
Wow. And that explosion in volume happened in just a 17-month period.
Just 17 months.
I mean, from a pure sales perspective, a regional director is probably looking at those numbers and popping champagne, celebrating unprecedented growth in the Chinese remittance market.
Oh, definitely. But compliance completely missed the massive red flags about how those funds were actually moving. The sudden volume wasn't organic growth.
Oh, was it?
It was indicative of a practice called smurfing or structuring. That's where large amounts of illicit cash are broken down into thousands of smaller, seemingly normal wire transfers to evade that $10,000 reporting threshold we talked about earlier.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, and MoneyGram allegedly failed to adequately investigate whether this hypergrowth was actually consistent with the expected legitimate behavior of those specific agents and their known customer base.
This actually introduces a really powerful operational concept from the sources. They state that a risk-based compliance program has to treat expected customer activity as a living hypothesis.
Yes, the living hypothesis. Hmm. So when you open an account, the bank establishes a baseline profile. A customer says, you know, I own a local bakery. I'll be depositing about $5,000 in cash a week and paying local vendors.
Pretty standard stuff.
Right. That profile is the bank's hypothesis for your risk level. But a living hypothesis means that profile cannot just sit static in a database somewhere. As you start transacting, the automated monitoring systems must constantly test that initial hypothesis against reality.
So if that local bakery suddenly starts receiving daily $50,000 wire transfers from shell companies in Eastern Europe, then the hypothesis is immediately invalidated.
Exactly. The behavior changed materially, which must trigger a human investigation. You can't just rely on the fact that they cleared a background check 3 years ago.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because this failure to treat risk as a living hypothesis didn't just happen with domestic retail accounts.
No, it didn't.
It exposed a massive structural vulnerability in how international banks plug into the United States financial system.
Yeah, the sources detail a $55.4 million coordinated penalty against the National Bank of Pakistan, specifically targeting their New York branch.
Okay, let me push back on this for a second, because on the surface, this feels like massive regulatory overreach.
Really? How so?
Well, the National Bank of Pakistan is a colossal organization, thousands of branches globally. Why are U.S. regulators bringing down the hammer on the parent company just because one relatively tiny branch in New York has some ineffective risk management? I mean, surely the parent company has limited visibility into the day-to-day paperwork of one overseas office.
I get why you'd say that, and it looks disproportionate until you understand the underlying plumbing of global correspondent banking.
Okay.
U.S. dollars can only ultimately settle inside the United States, period. So if a bank in Pakistan or anywhere else in the world wants to facilitate a U.S. dollar transaction for their clients, they must have a correspondent account with a bank located in the U.S., or they have to operate their own licensed branch on U.S. soil.
I get it. So that small New York branch isn't just a local retail storefront. It is the main artery pumping U.S. dollar clearing services for the entire global network of the parent bank.
Precisely. And because of that immense privilege, direct access to the American financial system, the parent organization is strictly legally responsible for ensuring that their global governance systems can monitor the risks flowing through that specific artery.
There's no passing the buck.
Right. The regulators noted that local compliance staff in New York simply cannot overcome global neglect. If the headquarters in Pakistan fails to invest in sophisticated data filtering or, you know, doesn't grant the New York compliance officers the authority to freeze suspicious transactions originating from overseas, the local staff are rendered entirely helpless.
And to prove just how catastrophic that blind spot can be, the sources introduced the Danske Bank resolution. This was the largest financial crime resolution announced in 2022.
Huge.
And it bypassed standard regulatory fines entirely. Danske Bank pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit bank fraud.
Yeah, they agreed to a criminal forfeiture of just over $2
billion. $2 billion.
And this entire conspiracy was orchestrated through their Estonian branch, which, get this, between 2008 and 2016, processed approximately $160 billion for high-risk non-resident customers.
Okay, wait. How does a branch in Estonia move $160 billion in high-risk funds without tripping every alarm bell in New York?
By systematically obfuscating the data, Danske's Estonian branch catered to non-resident portfolios. These were wealthy clients, largely from Russia and other high-risk jurisdictions, who set up opaque shell companies in places like the UK or the British Virgin Islands.
Right, classic shell company structures.
Exactly. And those shell companies banked with Danske in Estonia. When those clients wanted to move U.S. dollars, Danske Estonia routed the money through their U.S. correspondent banks.
But because Danske Estonia shielded the true beneficial owners of those shell companies, the U.S. banks were flying completely blind.
Exactly. They just saw money moving from a major European bank, assuming Danske had done the proper due diligence.
Which they hadn't.
Not at all. And Danske headquarters in Copenhagen allowed this highly profitable satellite operation to run for years. They actively misled U.S. financial institutions about the strength of their AML controls.
So it completely shatters the defense that a global headquarters can just write a policy manual, leave it in the main office, and assume a remote branch isn't secretly servicing illicit networks.
Exactly. It's a total failure of oversight.
Now, traditional global banks weren't the only ones failing to scale their defenses. 2022 was also the year the crypto industry realized they were going to be held to the exact same operational standards as Wall Street.
Oh, yeah. Reality hit hard.
The tech industry's whole move fast and break things philosophy collided violently with federal financial law.
And the sources highlight the crypto exchange Bittrex, which was hit with a $29.28 million penalty by Fincen. The operational details here showcase just a profound lack of investment in basic infrastructure.
It's actually shocking. Fincen found that at times, Bittrex relied on as few as two employees to manually review over 20,000 daily transactions.
Two employees.
For 20,000 transactions a day. That is physically impossible.
Right.
I mean, even if those two employees never slept, they would each have to analyze, investigate, and clear a transaction every few seconds.
Which just guarantees that illicit activity will flow through completely unchecked.
Yeah, and the data backs that up. Bittrex did not file a single suspicious activity report for over 3 years. From February 2014 to May 2017, nothing.
Wow. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the Bittrex case is a vital learning tool because it illustrates the operational intersection between anti-money laundering and sanctions enforcement. FinCEN credited a $24.28 million payment made to OFAC in this settlement.
Wait, so looking at Bittrex getting hit by both FinCEN and OFAC, they failed two completely different regulatory tests? Because if AML is about identifying dirty money coming into the system, like drug cartels trying to wash illicit cash, then sanctions must be about the destination. Even if a customer deposits a million perfectly clean, legally earned dollars, if they try to send it to a blocked entity in North Korea or Iran, that's a sanctions violation.
You've hit the exact dividing line. The legal tests are entirely distinct. AML requires proving suspicious intent or the presence of criminal proceeds. You are looking for behaviors that indicate fraud, human trafficking, or tax evasion.
Okay.
Sanctions, on the other hand, which are governed by OFAC, are about foreign policy and national security. They operate on strict liability.
Meaning intent doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter if the funds are clean, and it doesn't matter if it was just a clerical error.
Yeah.
If you facilitate a transaction with a comprehensively sanctioned jurisdiction, you have violated federal law.
And Bittrex failed at both simultaneously.
Spectacularly. They processed over 116,000 transactions valued above $260 million involving persons or entities in sanctioned jurisdictions.
So their weak customer identification let money launderers in, and their lack of location controls let sanctioned entities trade freely.
It was a complete free-for-all.
And they weren't the only digital asset firm facing reality. New York DFS fined Robinhood Crypto $30 million for inadequate staffing and manual monitoring as their business expanded.
Yep.
The OCC hit Anchorage Digital Bank with a non-monetary consent order for failing to satisfy BSA requirements. The regulators were screaming from the rooftops in 2022, basically saying, if your business scales, your compliance infrastructure must scale ahead of it.
Which brings us to the prophecy fulfilled. The absolute reckoning of 2023 and 2024.
Yeah, because the broader industry treated 2022's data as a temporary dip rather than a systemic warning, those unaddressed structural failures metastasized.
Exactly. The 2022 data was merely the leading indicator of the massive control collapses that produced record-shattering penalties shortly after.
We saw the Binance settlements in late 2023 resulting in $4.3 billion in combined penalties, plus a highly intrusive five-year monitorship. And then, in October 2024, the historic TD Bank guilty plea. Coordinated resolutions exceeding $3 billion.
And in that TD Bank case, the Department of Justice explicitly stated that the bank's transaction monitoring program remained largely static, despite massive increases in profits and the introduction of entirely new risk profiles.
They just ignored the warnings.
They ignored repeated internal warnings. During part of the relevant period, an astonishing 92% of transaction volume went completely unmonitored.
92%? I mean, that isn't a blind spot. That is an open vault door for organized crime.
Yes. So what does this all mean? If you're listening to this and managing a rapidly scaling business, how do you mathematically ensure your onboarding process doesn't just wave bad actors through as you grow?
Because you can't just throw 1,000 analysts at the problem and hope they catch everything.
Right.
A manual headcount never scales linearly with transaction volume. You need a structural, integrated defense mechanism. And the sources synthesize the remediation tactics from all these enforcement actions into what they call a resilient control stack. A resilient control stack.
Right. It is a seven-layer framework designed to prevent the exact governance failures we've been discussing.
Okay, let's build that stack from the ground up, because this is really the operational blueprint for avoiding a multi-billion dollar disaster. How does a company even begin?
The foundation, layer one, requires a current enterprise-wide risk assessment. And this cannot be a generic template downloaded from a consultant.
It has to be customized.
Highly customized. It requires analyzing the specific products you offer today, the exact geographies you operate in, and the actual customer demographics you serve. If your business pivoted from domestic software sales to facilitating cross-border payments, your risk assessment from 2 years ago is completely obsolete.
Makes sense. So once you know what your actual risks are, layer two focuses on scalable customer due diligence. This is where that living hypothesis we talked about is put into action.
Exactly. Your onboarding systems have to establish that baseline risk profile, but they also must be automated to continuously monitor for material changes in ownership structure or expected activity.
And that leads directly into layer three, which is complete data coverage. A sophisticated monitoring system is completely useless if it can't see the transactions.
Oh, 100%. Every single relevant payment type, whether it's a wire transfer, a mobile deposit, or a crypto swap, must feed into your monitoring systems accurately and on time. If a new product launch creates a data silo that compliance can't see, you have built a vulnerability.
So assuming all the data is flowing correctly, layer four is risk-sensitive surveillance. This is moving beyond basic rules like, you know, flag anything over $10,000.
Right, the smurfing we saw with MoneyGram.
Yeah, it requires behavioral analysis to catch those networks. Looking for velocity, unusual geographic corridors, or multiple unrelated accounts sharing the same IP address.
But generating those alerts brings us to layer five.
Yeah.
Effective case management. Because as we saw with Bittrex, if your system perfectly identifies 20,000 suspicious behaviors a day, but those alerts sit in a backlog for 6 months because you lack the staffing or workflow software to investigate them.
The system has totally failed.
Yes. Alerts must lead to timely, defensible decisions.
Which brings us to layer six. This tackles the dual threat we discussed earlier, integrated AML and sanctions intelligence. The investigation teams need to share data and typologies, but they must maintain clear operational distinctions based on their legal mandates.
Right. A suspicious AML pattern requires deep investigation and the filing of a SAR. But a confirmed sanctions match requires an immediate hard legal freeze of the assets.
Totally different responses. And finally, layer seven is independent testing. You have to prove the entire stack actually works on real-world data.
Exactly. Having a beautifully written policy on paper means absolutely nothing if you don't run regular adversarial tests against your own systems.
You have to ensure the technical execution matches the governance intent.
Boards and senior management really must stop treating repeat audit findings as minor administrative annoyances. Overdue action plans are the exact governance failures that precede criminal indictments.
So true. The core operational lesson woven through all the 2022 enforcement data is this. Enforcement risk becomes material long before a penalty is ever announced in a press release. The risk develops the very moment that known weaknesses are allowed to persist while the business continues to grow.
This raises an important question, something for you to consider long after we wrap up today. We spent a lot of time examining the living hypothesis as the gold standard for catching global financial criminals.
Right. The necessity of constantly reassessing a static baseline against rapidly changing behavioral data.
Exactly. So how might applying that exact same living hypothesis framework to our own professional assumptions, or even our strategic business models, reveal massive operational blind spots that we've been ignoring for years?
Wow. If the dashboard hasn't shown a warning light in a while, maybe it's time to check if the wires are still actually connected to the engine. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.